That's all that lives is gonna die. And there'll always be some people here to wonder why. And for every happy hello, there will be goodbye. There'll be time for you to put yourself on.
Hi, Sherman Skolnick bringing you news. Killed by the Monopoly Press. Presented 24 hours a day by the Citizens Committee to clean up the courts. 9800 South Oglesby. Some say the Western world is divided between the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. Generally true, but not always that simple. At one time, the Rockefellers owned the major interest in all three networks. ABC was sold to large military hardware contractors aligned with cap cities. To help business, they promote confrontation with the Soviet Union. Through General Electric, NBC was sold to the Mormon Church. CBS was sold to Swiss interests aligned with CNA. And, to a lesser degree, Arabs also now own CBS. For many years, CIA subsidized CBS News with $50 to $100 million per year of covert cash. Switched now to ABC cap cities, the CIA funding loss is causing huge layoffs at CBS. A new fourth network, Fox Broadcasting, is owned by the Rothschilds with Rupert Murdoch as their front. Fast growing in the United States is a Spanish language network, Telemundo, owned by Sal Steinberg as the agent for the Rothschilds. Many of the major money center banks are owned by various wings of the Rockefeller family, Chase Manhattan and Citicorp in New York, and First National Bank in Chicago. Bank America is owned by the French Rothschilds jointly with the Jesuits. Handing out huge loans to deadbeat Catholic Church countries south of the United States, Bank America is in the process of collapse. The U.S. Treasury has let it be known that they will not bail out the San Francisco-based money ship. Cynics sneer at Bank America's money orders and franchised credit cards. The Rothschilds are getting into American real estate while the Rockefellers are getting out. Fearing a collapse, the Rockefeller Center properties in Manhattan have been sold as a stock issue to the American suckers. To hold the new cash, a semi-secret bank was formed by David Rockefeller. The Rothschilds are buying up real estate, downtown Chicago, and commercial and other properties in the northwest suburbs here. Jointly with the Japanese, the Rothschilds are buying up central Illinois land. The Rothschilds operate in Chicago and nationwide through Carson Peary Scott and Company, and through two Canadian-based fronts, the Belzberg Brothers and Olympia and York Developments, run by the Reichman family, largest real estate developers in North America. Publicly, the Rockefellers appear to promote paper money. Privately, they are the largest importers into the United States of gold through their little-known front, Rhode Island Hospital Trust. On the other hand, the British Rothschilds control the political price of gold worldwide through their merchant bankers setting the price twice a day in London. Footnote, the Rothschilds financed the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. He opposed their commodity schemes in America. working people have to know who runs what so as to have a clear idea who the real enemy is. Just another story suppressed by the liars and whores of the press, those with the $50 hairdos and the nickel heads.
I've got your picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. I've got the records that we used to share, and they still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the records, she's got you. Your class ring that proved you care, and it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got these little things, she's got you. Your class ring that proved you cared, and it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got these little things, she's got.
Artifacts are never a substitute.
In making environments that basically were artifacts or works of art, and that acted as teaching machines upon the whole population. In many of his writings, he asserts the primacy of the visual in his perception and his general feeling of preference for the visual over the other senses. His feeling was that the passion for musical form in the later 19th century and in his own time betrayed our traditional visual values. Now, the clue then to one-way song may be in the fact that the visual sense is the only sense we have that is continuous and connected. All the other senses are discontinuous, whether touch, which every moment of which is different from every other moment, or hearing, which is discontinuous. The interval is necessary for the very act of hearing. In sight alone, or in the visual alone, is there a continuum, a connected universe that we associate with rationality and detachment. But one-way song seems to draw attention to these qualities of rationality and detachment and continuity and connectedness in thought and perception.
Yeats said, if you wish to get into a situation, a feeling of universality, that this has always been this way in all times in the world, you must arrange the thing in parallels so that there can be an interface or resonance between these parallels, but no connection. He called it the emotion of multitude, as he says, the parallels in Lear between the plot of Gloucester and his sons and Lear and his daughters. You don't make any connections. You just make this parallel, and then people begin to feel this is the way it is. This is universal.
This is the cliche archetype process. The endless scrapping and burrowing and borrowing and dumping and bringing back in a sort of Phoenix playhouse of repeat of the old stuff. I was delighted with Mr. Rhodes. He illustrated all my theories. Numerology, astrology, resonant interval of the Japanese origami. The whole of Japanese art is based upon interval, the spacing, not the connecting of things. The world of Mr. George Rhodes is entirely one of resonant, kinetic intervals and echoland, which gives you ecology. The entire world of TV with its dialogue and its talk shows and its probing and is a resonant world. Echoland, ecology. It's both echo and ecio.
The juxtaposition of unconnected and unseemingly unrelated parts sets up a resonance or music in all these fragmentary poems that is very carefully contrived. It's like Picasso's giving simultaneously by fragment to all sides of an object at the same time. You do that by fragmentation, but actually it is a very unified effect, as if you were holding it in your hand. These fragments I have shored against my ruins. The fascinating thing about his blue pencilings in the poem is this, I think, that he knew exactly the effect he wanted to have on that, on his age, not on Eliot, but on he thought of poetry as performing a particular function of updating consciousness. And so whatever Eliot trotted in, some irrelevant rhythm, something from the Georgians, something from the Victorians, or something from some other culture that was not relevant, he simply said, out. Because he wanted the effect, a specific effect of a new awareness. The fragments turn out to be carefully culled parts of other cultures, arranged in a tremendous mosaic of world culture, East and West, all times present, and all in dramatic action. They felt that history was now. They didn't think of it as past at all. It was immediately here and necessary for our nutrition. They felt that everything that had ever happened in the world was now and was available for nutrition, for the nutrition of impulse and creativity. They wanted a new diet for everybody, and they fed them on the riches of the ages. We had instant access in the 20th century to practically all the cultures of the world. And whether it was through anthropology, the James Frazer world, through the world of myth and archetype, or through archaeology. And the range of knowledge available to the 20th century is beyond any other period.
By this external extension of the central nervous system electronically, we're being forced increasingly to contemplate the need for a collective consciousness. We have a vast collective unconscious of human acquired experience stored in many media, including language. But in the age of the externalization of the nervous system, that unconscious gets terribly in the way. We need desperately today, faced with simultaneous events from China, Iran, so on, at the same minute, we need desperately a collective consciousness.
When you put your nervous system outside, the amount of information and data that you acquire by the moment is fantastic. You live typically under conditions of information overload. What does man do under conditions of information overload, of excess of any kind? He always has to devise some strategy of simplification. I think that the electric overloading of the data and information is compelling us to return to mythic modes of data processing.
mythic modes of data processing. Bob and his crazy pattern recognition number 22322 for our third term of Georgie and Ronnie.
Not Bob Furry. Not Bob Furry. Furry Lind. Pimple on the face of the North American continent. Not Bob.
Oh, my, my. Got green onions hanging all over the studio, precious thing. Gonna keep the vampires away, you understand? And this one, baby, is for only you.
Only
Network. Saturday on SEC 87, the tide keeps rolling. All this-
Presidential candidate Lyndon LaRouche and the seven associates and five affiliate organizations go on trial in Boston on Monday. They're charged with over $1 million in credit card swindles. The government's having trouble with the case because in order to grant immunity to those who will testify against Mr. LaRouche, they need a United States attorney in Boston to grant that, and they only have an acting attorney, and apparently the acting attorney can't act. We'll find out more about that on Monday. Why do you steal credit cards? Why do they...
Well, of course, the representation made to the press was $1 million in credit card something or other. Actually, the allegation is that $59,000 in transactions out of a $3-odd million campaign fundraising are alleged to be irregular.
And what's going on?
What's going on is what you saw featured on the news today. I represent one faction in strategic policy in the United States. The people who are behind the prosecution here represent the opposite faction.
Terrorist factions or what?
Well, for example, between January of 1982, and April of 1983, I was engaged in back-channel discussions with Soviet officials on what became known later as the SDI. I was the author of the SDI and of a strategic policy that goes with it. And a group in the intelligence community and government, associated with people like Roy Godson, for example, who's highly visible on this, moved in, particularly after Judge Clark left the NSC, and under Bud McFarlane and Admiral Poindexter, they had a field day. They ran a foreign counterintelligence operation against me.
Why?
Just because they hate me. They want to get me out of the way.
But they're in favor of the SDI.
No, they're not. No. Absolutely not.
You're saying John Poindexter is against the SDI?
Well, John Poindexter is up in the middle of a policy, the Iran gate policy, the Contra policy, things that go with that.
Well, what is your threat? If they're going to do that, why not resort to credit cards? If they're a CIA and everything, why not just kill you?
They don't care about the... Well, the problem is I'm a little bit too well-known to do that too easily.
So why credit cards?
Well, that was simply... They don't care about that. They never bothered investigating that. I demanded an investigation of this thing, and I was prevented from doing so. They never bothered investigating. All they did was use the pretext of these allegations in order to create a conspiracy charge. And the name is a conspiracy charge. It's a charge of a scheme and a conspiracy to bring in everybody. The object is to get me out of politics.
And you're saying they're going to fail?
Who knows? What happened today was President Reagan announcing that he was going to bring peace in our time, as was promised around the Munich Conference in 1938. This is a national disaster. There are many people in our country. There may be a euphoria among many people about this so-called peace in our time thing that came out today. From Caspar Weinberger, General Galvin, former General Rogers, the entire Pentagon, the people in Europe, in the German government, the French government, the British government, the Italian governments, many people in the developing sector are in a panic on this thing. They see this as the threatened end of civilization.
And a buildup of weapons is not a threatened end.
Weapons don't make war. People do.
Well, if I've got a gun, I got a better chance of shooting it, Lyndon.
This is all nonsense. First of all, the Soviets have never negotiated what they have with the United States.
And why do you think this conservative right-wing president's doing this?
It's not a conservative right-wing president. He's an ideological fellow, very shallow.
An ideological conservative?
Well, ideological. I think that's a big mistake. I think we ought not to have any of these left-wing, right-wing nonsense.
Why is Reagan doing this?
Because he's confused. Because everything he's done in his administration has, in general, with the exception of the SDI, has been a failure. He's going out of office within a year. The bug has been planted in his ear that he might get the Nobel Prize as a man of peace if he got a comprehensive treaty with Gorbachev. And I think the man is completely blinded to the implications of what he's getting into.
And do you think you matter in this play?
Very much so.
Why?
Well, that's the problem of the news media, that I've done over the years a number of very important things. And the news media never covers those things. They will cover a boy falling in love with a three-headed rabbit and put 6 minutes on the evening news on that subject on national TV. But if I do something momentous, that won't be done. If somebody chooses to call me some libelous name, that might get periodically a big icebox story in the Outlook section of the Washington Post.
What's an example of something momentous you've done?
Well, for example, 1975, there was Sri Lanka Colombo. An online nations conference of that number of nations, most of the population of the world, adopted a resolution which I had introduced on monetary reform. That's been the central issue.
You attended the conference?
No, I actually...
Made the presentation?
No. Mr. Dr. Fred Wills, who was then the foreign minister of Guyana, made the presentation.
How would the press know it was yours if you weren't there to present it?
The press didn't even cover it at all. The international press deliberately blocked the thing, the whole conference.
Why would the press pick on you?
It's not the press. Our press is run to a large degree by an establishment.
Of?
Wealthy families, interests of that sort.
And not only that, Gannett, that's a publicly owned company. There is no Gannett anymore. Alan Newhart.
No, but it works.
You got the New York Times, you got the Washington Post, that's a different family.
Make the choke point on UPI, the choke point on AP. Look, I'm in the news business. My wife is in the news business. Many of us in the news business. We know how it works on the inside.
I've never seen a conspiracy.
You've never seen on an international story, like, say, for example, Sri Lanka Colombo, 1976, governments representing the majority of the population of the world meet, resolve on monetary reform. There was not a stick of coverage of this conference anywhere in the world.
Well, explain something. Why would the New York Times say to the Washington Post, see that thing? Let's not print this monetary
thing. What's it?
For what purpose, Lyndon? Give me the answer. What's
the purpose?
I'm charging. If I say, Lyndon LaRouche planted a bomb outside CNN today and we discovered it, someone would have to logically say to me, why would Lyndon LaRouche plant a bomb? I'm asking you, why would the New York Times, in concert with the Washington Post and the Miami Herald, deliberately not only not print this story, but deny you credit?
It doesn't quite work that way.
Well, how does it work?
It works through choke points. It works often through government. It works through government agencies often, or factions of government.
What purpose?
To orchestrate events.
If governments approve this, why would governments want it killed?
Governments
approve the monetary conference.
Governments
approve it. Oh, yes. Then why would governments want to hide it?
But the governments of Western Europe and the United States disapproved, and they buried the story.
Why didn't they print it to show they disapproved?
They buried the story.
I'll be right back. I'm lost. We'll be back with Lyndon LaRouche after these words.
For black music from the motherland to this land, join me, Milton Blake, on The Musical Triangle every Sunday at 4 p.m. right here on CKLNFM 88.1. 2 hours of reggae, R&B, soul.
Let's sail the ocean to South Africa. From the shores of Cape Town to Pretoria.
Soca. And selected beats from the motherland. Information out of the black community and commentary on the black experience dealing with national and international issues. The Musical Triangle, with a poetic twist to music presentation, Sundays between 4 and 6 p.m. Melodies hard as a rock and gentle as a rosebud leaning against the nourishing ray of the morning sun.
Hello? Hello, this is Bob's Talk Show. It's a reverse radio show where we call out rather than you call in, and we're interested in your opinion on various topics. You willing to engage?
It depends on what it's all about.
Well, I'm going to bring up a topic, and then we can interact.
Would you explain who you are to me once more?
Bob is my radio name, and this is Bob's Talk Show.
Bob's Talk Show? On what radio station?
I sell it to various. If we never know whoever buys it. It's sort of like an entrepreneurial way of doing a talk show.
All right.
So the topic tonight is the discarnate experience. Now, the word discarnate, the way I mean it is that while you're on the phone and I'm on the phone, you are in the room I'm in, your voice is at least, and I'm in your room. In other words, we're in two places at the same time, which the human body cannot do. Right? You follow that?
Is there a comic show?
Yes, it can be. We sometimes have to sell it that way.
Citizens Committee to clean up the courts. 90. Richard Oglesby. The latest on the political assassination of Mayor Harold Washington. On that day, a fresh pot of coffee was made into which reportedly was put highly lethal 98% pure cocaine. He was not a user. When Harold arrived, he was given a cup of this deadly brew. Soon thereafter, he collapsed. For reasons never explained, his door was barricaded, and reportedly there was a delay in giving him CPR. Just then, his chief of staff, Ernest Bearfield, was in the hallway and reportedly made a cryptic remark. Did the mayor drink the coffee yet? The leftover coffee was dumped out the window. Harold was stone dead, and his body could have been taken right to the mortuary. At Northwestern Memorial Hospital, the doctors recognize the grand mal seizure, typical of cocaine overdoses or poisoning. They are a cocaine treatment center. To pacify the public, however, Harold's dead body was kept 2 hours on the pumping machine. The doctors sent an emissary to bosses of the mass media to say they suspected possible foul play. For example, Channel 2 is just a half a block away. The press lords invoked a secret national policy against publicizing such a death of a popular black leader. A military alert began with their helicopters hovering over City Hall. The toxicology screen showing Harold was poisoned is to be kept suppressed far into the next century. Reportedly implicated in Harold's murder are the governor, the U.S. attorney, a bodyguard, and certain aldermen and hotshots in City Hall. The press covered it all up. New message Thursday, Hotline News. Court corruption, political assassination. On 24 hours a day from the Citizens Committee.